The subject of this tape is the Fit for Life diet, pros and cons. First, I'll go over the pros, and then we'll go over some other points. I'm going to use the tape as a way to talk about nutrition today. The intent is not to criticize as much as to point out some of the issues that are raised by this book, some of which are very positive, and some which are not handled in a scientific way at all. My background is important in this. For 5 years, I embraced the system that this book discusses, natural hygiene. It's a very romantic system. It's basically a sort of back to nature, everything natural. Stay away from pills and stay away from meats and eat things in their natural state. For 2.5 years, I was the medical director at a health spa, which propounded and put forth this philosophy. I gave 3 talks a week in which I preached this material, so I was a real devotee. I really was deep into it. I've read all the books that are referred to, Dr. Shelton, Dr. Trawl, Dr. Tilden, and many others, and I knew a lot of the practitioners and worked with at least 500 people while at the spa who I put on this diet. Let's begin with the pros. First of all, the book is about health. It's about natural health, and that's good. It's a book that wakes people up to the values of fruits and vegetables, to the benefits of doing without a lot of junk food, and to the possibility of achieving health through natural means. This is very positive and certainly needed, and if it gives a few people hope, and is a starting place for them, great, because we certainly need that and that orientation. By the way, the book has sold 1.9 million copies, the most ever sold by the Warner Book Company, and it's quite an event. Vegetarian restaurants are doing land office business and so forth. Okay, the second pro on this book is that it discusses a concept called food combining. Food combining has to do with not eating certain kinds of foods at the same meal because it taxes our digestive system. There is something to this food combining idea, especially if you have weak digestion. And certainly some of the simpler rules are nice ones to follow for many people. For example, to have fruit alone is one of them. Another one is to have dairy products alone. A third one is to have heavy starch and heavy protein at separate meals. For people with weak digestion, this is a good idea. The book carries it much too far, turning it into sort of a principle, which it is not. All you have to do is look at primitive peoples, people who have done very well, and you find that they don't sit around and worry about whether they're having starch with their protein. But primitive people do avoid 10-course meals, and this is an advisable thing to do, and to that extent, food combining is a wise idea. That is, avoid your complex meals, your 10-course and strange combinations, especially if you find yourself getting indigestion, because it is true that we have limits to our digestive capacity. However, most of the health authorities realize that food combining is not the answer totally, because for one thing, you can starve yourself. You can end up not eating very much because you have a salad at lunch and some fruit for breakfast and a little protein. You just don't get enough food. Often it is better to take digestive enzymes and rebuild your enzyme system this way, and of course take other nutrients to rebuild your chemistry, and that way you can handle more. However, on a temporary basis, and for some people, food combining is a valid idea, and it's nice to be aware of that, and the book certainly points that out and talks about that concept. Another pro for the book is there's a discussion of the chemicals found in meats. And this is definitely true, and it's a shame what is done to our animals, and the way lamb and beef is raised, and chicken that are kept in little coops and fed antibiotics and hormones and all kinds of garbage, literally garbage at times, sawdust, all sorts of strange things in their feed. And so that discussion is important. The authors do make the suggestion that you get clean meat. If you're going to have meat, get good quality. In Arizona, the Foster Farms is a better chicken. So is Furpo, which is an Arizona-grown chicken. There is a place called Young's Farm near Cordis Junction, Lazy J4 Ranch in Yarnell. These places do have outlets in Phoenix, general area. And you can get good quality meat. And that's important. So that discussion is a good one to point out. The meat that's found in you know, your Burger King and other things, not only can it contain a lot of soybean products and other things, but it contains a tremendous amount of fat and is not a healthy product at all. So the discussion of the chemicals in meat is a good one. The only trouble is, again, this author goes so far as to say don't eat any meat. And there's no scientific evidence that that is a good idea. Matter of fact, in my own practice and in many, many health books, that's a bad idea. And I'll discuss that at length later. But the idea of getting good quality is helpful. Another excellent feature of the book is there's a discussion, a sort of a long discussion of all the different fruits and all the different vegetables. And I think that's excellent because often we restrict our diets. We're not aware of anything other than peas and carrots and oranges and apples. And in fact, there is a whole world out there of vegetables which are interesting and tasty and not too hard to prepare, and fruits. And these can enrich any diet. Another set of foods which the book talks about are seeds and nuts. These are excellent foods, very, very excellent foods. And they should be part of our diet too. Almond butter, sesame butters, and sunflower seeds and sunflower butter. These are wonderful foods. They're high in calcium, they're high in protein, they're high in minerals and vitamins. And by all means, they should be included in the diet. And so the book is correct in pointing out the value of these foods. Now, these are the main points that I found very helpful about this book. I want to discuss a number of ideas that I think need some looking at. And I'll start with the low-protein idea. You know, the book states that we eat much too much protein. Well, some people do, you know, if you're living on Big Macs and other things. But you can easily overdo that and not eat enough protein either. Most primitive people... Well, before I start with that, the book talks about animals and it compares us to apes. And this sounds very romantic. We have the same digestive system, the same teeth, the same, other organs of digestion, and therefore we should eat the way apes do. Well, this is nice and sounds okay, but the only problem is we're not apes. At least most of us aren't. There's always a few around, but apes lead a totally different lifestyle. They don't think. They have all day to sit around munching on leaves. It's a totally different organism. A much more useful group, if you want to learn about how humans should eat, look at the healthiest people in the world. Look at populations. And there are excellent books on this subject. One of the best is called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration by Weston Price, DDS. He was a dentist and he went around the world studying the healthiest populations he could find. And at one place in the book, he says, I had really hoped to find a vegetarian group and I can't find any. All people seem to need this. Some meat, some fish. They'll actually go to war with other tribes in their area, some of the landlocked groups who didn't have any animals apparently, to get some fish at least. And he says people need that, and they need protein, concentrated proteins. People eat seeds, they eat nuts, They eat meats. They eat cheese. And so this stuff about we're like apes and we should eat like apes sounds good superficially, but really it's a lot of hogwash. It's a lot of nonsense. And it will get you in trouble, I guarantee you, in the long run. So the low protein thing is very easy to overdo. It's usually good to have protein twice a day. You don't have to have animal protein two or three times a day. It can be vegetable quality, peanut butter, good quality, that is non-hydrogenated peanut butter. It can be tofu or eggs or other foods, other protein foods, seeds. But protein is important, and having it just once a day and a little bit. Some of the meals in the recipe section don't even have it once a day, really. This is not going to produce health. It will produce a euphoria in the short run because protein is a little more difficult to digest, and if you cut it out, you will feel better in the short run, a sort of euphoria that comes when you become a vegetarian. But in the long run, lots of problems. For example, the meats are higher in zinc. I'm covering two issues here, the low protein and the vegetarian issue. Meats are higher in zinc and lower in copper, relatively speaking. Vegetarian proteins are the opposite, higher in copper, lower in zinc. Well, zinc is very deficient in our population already because of soil depletion. If you eat a vegetarian diet, as I did for 5 years, I know all about it, and what happens, you feel good for a while, but most people, I don't say everyone will feel bad, but most people, after a while, their energy begins to decline, and they have symptoms of copper toxicity. These include becoming spacey and low energy, food allergies, depressed, and certain other problems. So, in fact, if you study human populations, they eat animal products. They all do. This was a very thorough study. This Weston Price, the book is fabulous. It's a classic of nutrition. And I've attended lectures by some of the foremost health authorities today. And I'm not talking about establishment people who are defending the status quo or working for the meat board or the dairy board. I'm talking about people who work with thousands of people every day. And adequate protein and some animal products are helpful for most people. In my own nutrition practice, I've worked with many vegetarians. I've wanted them to stay vegetarian if they can. I've wanted to work with them on that basis. I've done all I can, but I don't know that there's been more than one or two that have stayed vegetarian. They just don't get their health together. They just don't get well. They don't really begin to feel good. There are certain brain fats. You know, your brain is 60% fat by weight because the coverings on the nerves are fat. And there are fats that are not found as easily in vegetable products. And they're found more in the brain. Dr. Jensen coined the term brain fats. He also says, it's hard to be a vegetarian and drive the LA freeway. In other words, our modern lifestyle may have something to do with our need for meat. I know that there's religious reasons and belief systems that say we shouldn't eat animals, and I think that's nice, but when it comes to physiology, there may be other factors involved. So the low protein business and the vegetarianism is, there's not a shred of real evidence to support that vegetarianism is better for you, nor with low protein. Now, excessive protein is bad for you. And so if you're having two or three steaks a day or something like this, yes, you can overdo. As long as we're on the subject of protein, let's talk about dairy foods. Again, the book makes this simplistic argument that you don't see any giraffes drinking milk after they're weaned, and you don't see any cows drinking milk. Why should we? Well, you know, you can make those arguments, but again, we're not giraffes and we're not cows. We have unique requirements, and in the Weston Price's book, for example, many, many tribes drank milk and made cheese from goats, from cows, from camels, whatever animals they had around. Again, it seems to work. And his argument that the yogurt story is false is simply, that's he's wrong. It's not false. These people do eat cultured and fermented products. I've lived among Mexican Indians. They do. They eat cheese. They eat a small amount of meat. Interestingly enough, they do not eat very much fruit. And that was pointed out to me by a seminar recently by another excellent health authority, Dr. Alexander Schoss. And he mentioned too, he said, you know, these people don't eat fruit. And I always wondered about that. And we'll talk about problems with fruit in a minute. But dairy, yes. Now, that doesn't mean that it's good for everybody. Cow's milk, which has been pasteurized and homogenized and often preserved with formaldehyde, possibly, or copper, may not be a good product. But if you can get good quality and your body chemistry accepts it, you can do very well on this as part of your diet. So those items are really not scientifically researched, and what this Fit for Life is really a romantic fantasy kind of book with really it's a religion, it's a kind of a dogma, you know, that these are good and these are bad. I mean, in a way, who are they to tell us how to eat when people have been around for thousands of years and doing just fine? And not overweight, not anything else. There are some problems with the American diet. Wheat allergies, milk allergies can cause tremendous amount of overweight. The fat content of fast foods overload anybody. But you don't just reject the whole system. You just start getting rid of the junk and the garbage. Hydrogenated oils and this kind of thing found in margarine. I mean, this kind of food is real garbage and will derange the metabolism. Well, let's talk about fruit. The book makes a big play for fruit. It says, it makes a strange statement that the earth is 70% water and our bodies are 70% water, therefore our food should be 70% water, like fruit. Well, first of all, that's crazy logic. That doesn't make any sense at all. Forgive me, I don't mean to be harsh, but it's kooky. Doesn't make sense. What does one have to do with the other? Another thing is, our bodies are not 70% water. According to Guyton's Physiology, 6th edition, our bodies are 57% water. And so the whole thing is off anyway, even in his numbers, in his statistics. But even if it were, it doesn't make sense that that's the reason to eat that way. Fruit is mostly water and sugar and a few minerals. It's generally a mixture of fructose, sucrose, and glucose with a few minerals and vitamins in it, some vitamin C, a little vitamin E. It is not a dense nutrient food. They say this in the book, that fruit is a dense in nutrients. It is not a nutrient dense food at all. It's mostly water. Fruit also, and this to me is one of the greatest oversights of the book and makes it obvious that it's sort of a sales job and not a thorough scientific report. Fruit is one of the most highly sprayed foods we have. And if you're worried about chemical contaminants, and they go into the whole issue of meat, you should be very worried about your fruit, because fruit is gassed and waxed and shellacked. The apples in the state of Washington, what they do is they're very, very, very heavily applied with pesticides. Most fruit has to have a lot of pesticide on it to grow, in the United States at least, where the soils are depleted and the agricultural methods are not so great. And so when they pick the fruit, the pesticides are oil-based and they stay on the fruit. They don't wash off. So what they have to do is they have to apply an oil solvent, an oil-based solvent, to get it off. Well, when they do that, they remove a coating of wax, natural wax, that is on fruit that protects the fruit from, invasion by bugs and things. Well, when they remove that, the fruit will go bad very quickly. So what they do is they will apply wax to the fruit, and sometimes vegetables. And a friend of mine worked up there in Washington for a while, and he said that he noticed that the thing had shellac was the main ingredient in what they were spraying and putting on the fruit, the apples and things. Another problem today is hybrids. You're not eating the same fruit as you were eating 40 years ago when the books were written, by the way. See, part of the problem with this book is that it's outdated. I don't care that it was published in 1980, whatever. The concepts are outdated. The books upon which it's based were written 30, 40, 50 years ago, when there wasn't any pesticides to speak of, when there wasn't a lot of technological processing of fruits, and when we weren't using as many hybrids. Now, the hybrids today are grown for redness. The apples are grown for redness. The tomatoes are grown for easy ability to be picked. And so these products are not grown for nutrition. And that's what you're getting today. You're also getting fruit that's been shipped long distances often and is picked green and has deteriorated just from shipping. So there's substantial problems with fruit, substantial. One of the authors who is one of the founders of this movement, actually, named Ebba Wehrlund, who had a clinic in Switzerland, I believe it was in Switzerland, he, in his book, he says he came to the United States because he heard there was a lot of fruit here and he liked those kinds of foods, and he ate fruit and probably got sick. And he said he investigated why, and it was all the pesticides and the spraying and the herbicides that we use on our fruit here. So you're not really eating such a good product. Besides that, as I say, if you study primitive dietaries, and I was surprised when I lived in Mexico and when I read this book, fruit is not one of their main foods. It's eaten in little bits here and there, but it is not a major food. And there must be good reason. These people have evolved over millions of years. They probably know what they're doing, because the people who were studied were in excellent health. They didn't have degenerative diseases. Often the book is full of people's teeth, because he was a dentist, and the not a cavity, not a problem at all, and remarkable health, remarkable stamina, and also good mental functioning. These people could see stars that we require a telescope to see. They could see an animal running, you know, several miles away. The white man who was with them couldn't even see it, and they could see it moving. Many, many extraordinary abilities. The hearing was fantastic among these people. So the whole business of the problems of fruit is ignored in the book, and it's a very serious one. And so don't think you're solving your problems when you're eating fruit. You're not. And you're not getting a very nutrient-dense food, and you're getting a lot of sugar, which is another problem because there's a lot of yeast today around. And by the way, fruit is a food that carries yeast organisms. Fruit and fruit juices are moldy easily because yeast organisms grow on fruit. And too much fructose, which is one of the fruit sugars, can cause copper deficiency in some people. That's some research. And for some people, sugar of any kind is a problem. Hypoglycemia-related problems. And you start eating fruit, and you go up and down like a yo-yo, your blood sugar levels. So this is all ignored, unfortunately. Another topic, well, this general topic of the ape and man analogy. Again, it sounds very romantic, but it really isn't, doesn't make any sense. If you want to study what we should eat, look at human populations. The research is available, and it doesn't show that we live like apes. It doesn't. We don't sit around and ruminate all day. Now, another problem with the book and with all books of this type is that it says that we're all the same, we should all eat the same. And that's simply not true. There's a concept called biochemical individuality. Anybody who is responsible knows and worked in this field knows this to be the case, that as they say, one man's food may be another man's poison. There are individual differences, and they can be quite pronounced. They can be quite vigorous, and it's foolish to ignore this and overlook and just talk about humanity in general. It's just extremely simplistic. It doesn't apply. And if you talk to enough people, even, you know that. You know that certain people can eat certain foods, some people can eat the same thing and they'll get sick. It just isn't the case, and they're just kind of simplifying things. Makes a nice book because you don't have to think. But it won't work for a lot of people, and it's not the reality. Now, another issue which the book doesn't really address is the situation of food today in our world. The book, again, the reason is understandable because at the time Herbert Shelton and Dr. Tilden wrote, our food was pretty good quality. It was fairly good, the fertilizers were natural, they were not chemical fertilizers. There were not a lot of hybrids grown for production. There were not a lot of pesticides used, as there are tons and tons today. By the way, today we produce 10 times as much food on the same land as we did 50 years ago. Now, it's not possible to have 10 times as much nutrients because they're not there, so that means the food is less nutrient dense. It's just more starch and fiber. And that's the case today. The food is deficient in manganese. This has been well documented. Zinc is deficient in 32 of the 50 states. That's well documented in the soil. So the food is deficient. And because of this, this is one factor, and then there are a few others. Just eating this diet is not going to necessarily be enough. It's not going to get you through, especially if you don't eat very much, if you eat a lot of fruit, which is just water. Also, we have other stresses today: air pollution, water pollution. We've never had anything like this before. Radiation. I mean, radiation, you may not think of it as important, but it is, and it's only been around since 1950. I mean, that's when the first atomic explosion, certainly atmospheric testing, was done. First bomb was 1945. And by 1945, all these books had been long written. Pesticide problems, which use up your nutrients and increase your demands on your body. Well, this again only began since 1945. World War II really was the chemical revolution in chemistry, science, the artificial fertilizers, so forth. Also, other kinds of things like food additives, which increase your need for certain nutrients just to deal with them. Again, these are new. These are modern hazards, as it were. And this book totally ignores this problem. It assumes that you just be like the apes, swing in the jungle, and eat your fruits, and you'll be fine. At this point, please stop your tape recorder and turn over to the other side of the tape. We'll continue on the other side.
And I found that, I used to shun them. Oh, you don't need all that stuff. Well, that's really an anti-science approach. There is good science, and vitamin supplements can help an awful lot of people. Awful lot of people. Matter of fact, between the radiation that's in the present and the pesticides and the poor food and the stress levels due to financial instability and family instability, it may be good to get a divorce if you're not getting along, but children today are raised in unstable homes and unstable environments and drugs and a lot of strange things. That those stresses all use up nutrients. They use them up at a rate 5 or 10 times what used to be, even what used to be 10 years ago. I work with a trace mineral laboratory. I work there, and I talk very closely with the people who do the testing. And over the past 10 years, our bodies are going downhill in terms of nutrients. It just isn't in the food. I don't care what you eat. I don't care if you're a juicer and you live on 3 glasses of juice a day. It just isn't there. That's what I found. The only way to get it often is with food supplements. Now, you don't necessarily have to take pills. There are things like brewer's yeast and blackstrap molasses. There are, spirulina and bee pollen. There are concentrated barley green and blue-green manna. These products are concentrated nutrients. At least a person should use these things today. But even those things, I find, sometimes we have to go to specific nutrition, which is some concentrated nutrients, and that's the only way to get well. There were a lot of people who went on the fruit and vegetable regimen, and they just didn't get well, and I didn't understand it. They didn't get over their infections. They didn't get over their problems. I was one of those people. I felt okay. Of course, my health was pretty good, but to begin with. But I find today that you have to say, okay, just because it's a commercial product and people are making money off it, that doesn't mean it's bad. You know, there's an intimation in this book that, you know, vitamins is a billion-dollar industry. It's not that big an industry. Compared to aspirin tablets and cold remedies, it's a nothing. You could put it in a thimble. There's no money to be made in vitamins. I've actually tried with a number of clients to keep them as vegetarians. They wanted to do that, and I said, all right, I'll work with you, and we'll balance things out and see how it goes. It's worked with very, very few. Matter of fact, I can't think of any that I would say it's worked well with. There are people who get by, of course, but as far as working well, I really can't say that I found too many who can do it. That may just be the people who come to me, but I think I get a sort of cross section. Okay, the next thing on my list here was problems with fruits. I think I talked about it. Not only are they hybrids, but they're sprayed a lot. Copper sulfate is used as a fungicide. Mercury and arsenic are used as fungicides and pesticides widely on fruits. Washing the fruit, peeling the fruit will not get rid of them. These things pervade the fruit. They're sprayed from the time the fruit is little. Plus all the wax and other things you find on a fruit. The next topic is food supplements. Now, for 5 years, I didn't believe in them because this book talks about it. It says, you know, and I can quote them. It says they are virtually useless, and it says they are often toxic to the body. And I believe that, and I never felt very well. And when I started on food supplements, vitamins and minerals, things, boy, did I feel better. And these were the synthetic ones, you know, because, for example, B complex, it's all synthetic unless it's very low dose, because it's hard to get a high dose one and make it natural source. And in the last 5 years, working with a lot of people, I've helped a lot of people regain their health through using vitamin supplements, and it wouldn't have happened without it, I guarantee. Now, so I think that statement is totally false, that they're useless and toxic. It's false and it's stupid and it's dangerous. It's one of these back to nature, don't do anything that's unnatural, anything that's man-made. You know, it sounds romantic, but it's silly today because the food is inadequate. The pollution and the other thing put more stress and strain. This is an important issue because what I found when I worked at this health spa is that the people just didn't get well the way they were supposed to. They went on their fast, they went on their fruit diets, and it just didn't work that well. It worked for some people, of course, but certainly not the glowing reports. And you know, you can tend to think, well, maybe those guys were just wrong. No, they weren't necessarily wrong when they wrote the books, but the situation has changed. The situation has changed from 1950 to the present. It's changed in the last 10 years, even. I work with a trace mineral laboratory in Phoenix, and we measure trace element content of people's hair, which is a measure of their body content to some extent. And over the past simply 10 years, which is as long as the laboratory has been in existence, the content of minerals has gone down, the manganese and the other trace elements, and the content of the toxic metals, cadmium, aluminum, copper, have gone up. So what we're getting is we're getting a rapid degeneration and decline in health and degeneration of the bodies and a decline in nutritional status. Why? Well, it's not too hard to figure out. It's because of the junk foods and the processed foods, plus the environmental stresses, which use up nutrients, and the pesticides, which tend to poison our system. Also, the widespread use of medications. By the way, that's another difference. When these books were written, antibiotics weren't the order of the day, plus a lot of other medicines, cold remedies, and other things. And that has taken a big toll on our health as well. A lot of prescription drugs, which are not without side effects, and one of the most potent side effects is depletion of nutrients. You can read that in any book,
in any pharmacology book. And today, certainly more than in 1940, there is a much larger pharmacopoeia, a much larger set of medicines that are given routinely to millions of people. And just taking your fruits and vegetables is often not enough to re-nourish yourself, regain health, or to even maintain it. By the way, another factor is that children today are being born deficient. And so they get off on the wrong foot. They get off to a bad start. They're born deficient in zinc. We see this all the time. They're born high in cadmium and mercury and lead and things like this, aluminum. And so these children often need more. And even within the natural hygiene movement, I remember studying, after I studied the whole thing and for a few years, I remember hearing about another doctor. His name was Dr. Giancursio, who realized this, and at least he recommended that people eat blended salads, I remember. That was, you took about a half a head of lettuce and you put it through a blender, and you get a lot more nutrients that way because you could eat at least a half a head of lettuce very easily in a blended form, a sort of a gazpacho. And so he was at least aware of it, and there were a number of people there who had been followers of the natural hygiene, and they told me, don't listen. Go and see Dr. Curcio because he knows that you need more. And so this is a serious drawback that this book doesn't talk about that at all. It doesn't talk about our food supply today, the transportation of foods, the bad soil, the pesticides, and other things. And it doesn't talk about other stresses that are using up our nutrients, fast pace of life, on and on, and how to compensate. It just says, just eat and don't worry about it kind of thing. By the way, the people in this movement don't live any longer. There's all kinds of claims, but I will relate a story. When I worked at the health spa, the owner and I used to play racquetball every day, and all of a sudden he became weak. He developed red blotches on his skin. He stopped playing racquetball. I noticed he fell down a few times. Then he sort of disappeared from sight. I heard he was fasting to get well. And one day, they called me up to his room. He hadn't wanted me to visit because I was a medical student. I was studying medicine there. And even though I worked there, he didn't want me to see him. But he called me up there because he was getting ready to, cash it in. He had literally, he gave away the deed to his property. He was down to 85 pounds. He couldn't hold any food in his stomach. He couldn't even sit up. He couldn't move. He gave away his money, and I took one look at him. I said, David, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you don't have any blood, I can tell you that. He was yellow, just like a corpse. And I did convince him that he needed a blood transfusion, much against his, philosophy. And we drew blood, and he had a hemoglobin of 4, and it turned out he had pernicious anemia. Now, this was a surprise to me because one of the parts of this philosophy, which is in the book, is that pernicious anemia is not a problem. You just eat your vegetables and your comfrey leaves and banana or whatever it is, and you get your B12. Well, they're not right about that, because this man was doing it, and yet he had pernicious anemia. He had some neurological signs, too. And with 2 pints of blood inside of him, within a month, he looked younger than I had ever seen him, and he was back playing racquetball and really back on his feet. Now, he since died, and I wouldn't be surprised if there was some permanent nerve damage that was done by the prolonged time that he had this problem. But this was one of the things that opened my eyes, that maybe there was something wrong with this simplistic philosophy of just eat vegetables and you'll be fine. My own health went downhill terribly. It has taken me 5 years to recover my health from going on that diet. I was strenuously warned to stay away from the raw food and the vegetarian regimens. But of course, some of us have to try things in spite of warnings by well-intentioned people. I had another interesting experience, which was that at one point I left this health spa and went to work in a remote village as part of social service for doctors. And they didn't have any fruits and vegetables in this place. It was very remote. They had corn and they had beans, which they had 3 times a day. Once a week, they killed an animal and everybody came and got some meat. They had a little cheese, a little bit of fruit growing around, and that was about it. We had a vegetable garden, so we had some onions and a few little, you know, a few vegetables, some lettuce, and I didn't know what to do. I panicked. I thought, oh my God, you know, how am I going to eat this food that they have? But you know what? My health improved. I was really surprised. Got off all that fruit, started eating their meat, whatever they had available. Sometimes some would catch a fish, we'd get fish. And my health improved. And as soon as I went back to the health spa and back on the other diet, within 10 days, my health declined again. And I learned something from all that. Although it didn't convince me. The book is so romantic, and the system sounds so romantic that I had to get really sick myself before I realized what I had done. And that you deplete your body of zinc, you deplete your body of certain fatty substances, you do severe damage with this kind of diet. Another topic I want to talk about is, and we're sort of leading up to it, is supplements. The book dismisses vitamin supplements in about one sentence. It just says they're useless, virtually useless, and toxic. Well, again, this is sheer nonsense. Absolute nonsense. I remember when I went on vitamin supplements, it made all the difference in the world. Within a week, I felt it like a different person. Vitamin supplements today are practically mandatory. Now, a lot of people would take issue with that, but I would say that if you want to counter air pollution, water pollution, you need more antioxidants because you've got a lot of free radicals flying around, and free radical pathology causes cancer, and everybody knows that. Vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin A, these are protective nutrients, and we need a little bit more, and you can't get them out of the food. They're just not there. Also, your minerals are deficient in the soil and therefore deficient in the food. How are you going to get them? At least you should take kelp tablets or dulse powder or dulse tablets or something. These are rich mineral sources. It's not an accident that in Poland they gave the population iodine to counteract the effects of the radiation, because poisons are carried on minerals, the radiation poisons. Also, good minerals will keep the bad ones, cadmium and lead, which is in the air we breathe, out of your body, mercury, so forth. And this statement that vitamins, because they're not natural, quote, you know, are useless, is just ridiculous. They just don't know what they're talking about. There's plenty, there's thousands of studies showing the benefits in certain conditions, obviously, and in various, used correctly, no one is saying to go crazy about them, of supplementary nutrients. I think the day is going to come soon when the people who are the nuts are the ones who won't take any, because you need them more and more. The food is getting worse every day. The air is not getting any better. The water is definitely not getting any better for a long time. This is not going to get better because we're still using pesticides. We're still dumping all kinds of toxic chemicals. We're still releasing radiation into the air from our nuclear power plants and other things. And that situation is not going to change in the near future, drastically at least. Hopefully it'll change for the better. I don't want it to change for the worse. So that aspect really indicates a sort of an anti-science approach. A lot of this book is a kind of an anti-science, anti-intellectual sort of approach. I can understand why this would be attractive. It was attractive to me. What can happen is you get disappointed in the medical profession. This is what happened in my case. I got involved in this field because of illness in my family, and I realized by doing my own research and then talking to many, many doctors in high places what jerks they were as far as nutrition was concerned, how close-minded they were, how ignorant they were. Even though they professed to know, when I questioned them carefully, they didn't have the faintest idea what they were talking about. They had never seen the original studies. They had never done any of their own work. They were just making pronouncements based on their journals, and their journals are biased, very biased. And when I learned this, you become very disillusioned. And you say, oh my God, how can this be? And what am I going to do? And you're thrown back on your own. And so you're attracted to a system which just says, you don't need any of that. It's all baloney and malarkey. Well, I can see that, and it's a stepping stone, as I say. It's one way, a starting point, but it's very dangerous because there is good science out there. There is good biochemistry. There is good nutrition available, clinical nutrition. There is good use of supplements and nutrients, and medicines can have their place. They should take a back seat, but they have a place at times. And that's available, and that should be embraced. We can't go backwards. You can't turn the clock back and just say, back to the jungles. It certainly won't work if you're living in a city, and I don't think it would work anywhere because most of the contaminants we have to deal with are totally worldwide. Air pollution, acid rain, radiation, polluted water. These are universal today. They're not localized problems, and the food we eat comes from everywhere. So the book is that sort of a romantic fantasy, a back to nature, anti-science, and it's very dangerous that way. It's not a healthy thing, even though it sounds simplistic and it's easy to understand. Another area of the book which is necessary to talk about is there's a chapter about detoxification and cleansing. And it says the main thing about this diet is to cleanse out your body. Well, again, on a principle level, that's correct. In fact, the principles that are discussed in the book are correct. The principles sound correct. You know, it'd be nice to get along without killing animals. It would be nice to get along without vitamin tablets. It would be nice you know, just eat natural foods and not have to resort to anything else for your health needs. The trouble is how you practice those things. Because today we're not living in a natural environment, so you've got to arm yourself and protect yourself. And you use science to help you. Well, one of the things is cleansing. Yes, it's very important to cleanse your body. But what they seem to overlook is a couple of things. Number one, your body is meant to cleanse itself all the time. It's meant to heal itself, to eliminate waste products, and to repair and regenerate tissue. It does it 24 hours a day. You don't have to go on cleansing diets. You don't have to do this. You shouldn't have to, let's put it that way. Your body should do this by itself. This is not to say that there wouldn't be times to do it, but as a general principle, they're forgetting that that's part of general, the self-healing properties of the body. What I found in working at the health spa was that a lot of this cleansing stuff just didn't work. People would get sick, they would go through their healing crises, but they didn't get well. Matter of fact, I used to have all kinds of symptoms come up. For 5 years, I was on this program, sort of, and doing fasting and watching my diet and being a vegetarian. That's what I mean by being on the program. And I kept having little symptoms here and there. Things would come up, little aches and pains, and every time I thought it was a healing crisis. Because that's what they talk about, a cleansing. You know, oh, you're cleansing. But you know what? It wasn't. And I remember the one that finally woke me up to that or gave me an inkling was that I had a toothache. And I thought, oh, another cleansing. You know, must have poisons in there. Well, I didn't have poisons. Finally, someone said, I think you better go to the dentist. And I had an abscess tooth. Fortunately, it was a wisdom tooth and it could be removed easily and didn't cause a lot of problems. But that wasn't health, that wasn't cleansing, that was just sickness and disease crises because my energy was running down. What I've since discovered is that you can get a body to cleanse and remove poisons faster than you can imagine, just incredibly fast, by balancing the body chemistry. Because by balancing the body chemistry using trace mineral analysis to give you an idea of what's going on, by balancing the chemistry, you increase the body's energy. By increasing the body's energy, the body will cleanse. It will eliminate poisons incredibly fast, and their true healing crises, we know it by the symptoms, and by the way, they don't last too long, and there's violent symptoms sometimes, and they go away immediately, and a lot of other little keys, and the people are much better when they're through. And what I found is that the fruit diets and the fasting, while it did work on some people, and a lot of people, they got worse. Why? Because today, the energy is low, the organs of elimination, the liver, the kidneys, the bowels, aren't working well, the skin, and the body can't cleanse, even if you put it on the right diet. And so the whole thing is flawed this way. It's a very romantic idea, just eat fruit and you'll cleanse out. But it doesn't always work that way. It's too simplistic, and for a lot of people it won't work at all. You'll just feel terrible on that kind of diet. So it's necessary. As I say, I really thought I was cleansing for 5 years when I really wasn't. And I didn't have the faintest idea because I was quite taken in by the whole system. So this is another area of the book that you need to use with caution. Again, the principle is correct, detoxification. We certainly have to do that. But the real key, that what we need to do really is replace. It's not just detoxification. You have to replace the bad elements with the good ones. The cadmium has to be replaced by zinc. The lead is replaced by calcium. The mercury and the nickel have to be removed and replaced by the right nutrients. And that takes some coaxing and some science and some thorough-going application to accomplish. That's the way to do it, not just drink fruit juice for a week or two or take a lot of enemas. That won't do it alone. Well, they don't even recommend enemas in this book, but sometimes they're helpful. These are some of the major features. When I seem critical of the book, I'm not being critical of the authors, meaning that they're trying to pull something over on us. I think they were probably very well intentioned. I know that when I was involved in this and giving talks 3 times a week and practicing it, certainly I was very well intentioned. I certainly wasn't trying to hurt anyone, and I was doing my best, and really felt I was helping people. And as I say, there are some very good things, getting off all the junk food, getting off the soda pop, the heavy meat diets, the heavy animal beef fat, getting off all the pastries. These things are really marvelous and excellent. And I feel that the authors probably did have good intentions in mind. There's one statement in the book where the wife, Marilyn Drummond, says something about she's not affirming that what they're saying is the truth, but that what they're saying is what the natural hygiene philosophy says. You know, in other words, she's admitting that it may not be the truth, but that's the philosophy, and that's what the book is about. The only thing about that is that's a cop-out, that's an excuse. We want the truth. We don't just want some philosophy for the sake of philosophy. But I feel the authors, you know, may have been very well-intentioned, or probably are. And so I'm not being critical at that level that it's a fraud or anything of that nature. I don't think we need to accuse people that way. But I've certainly found in my own experience and working with thousands of people, several thousand since then, that this book leaves much to be desired, and that in fact nutrition is a complicated subject and biochemistry is a complicated subject. It is not one that can be dismissed by saying that vitamins are useless and so forth, and don't eat this and do eat that. It's just not that easy. It just isn't. The book also discusses hypoglycemia, and again, I was a little disturbed that it just sort of glazes over the whole thing. It just says, yeah, you know, there is some hypoglycemia, and that's it. You know, it just sort of glosses over the subject. Well, hypoglycemia, and fruit sometimes aggravates it, is a severe problem. It's a real problem for a lot of people. And so is diabetes, and sometimes eating fruits and things are not helpful for some people. So the book tends to gloss over what it doesn't address, and what it does address, it tends to take to a sort of extreme. One final aspect of the book is this business of eating different foods at different times of the day, fruit in the morning, salad at lunch, and a heavy meal at night. I don't know where they came up with that. Well, yes, they say that the body is cleansing in the morning and then assimilating and so forth. But this concept is, again, a fabrication, a sort of a concept, a romantic idea, which, again, bears little resemblance to reality. If you study primitive cultures, they just don't follow that idea. They don't wait till night to eat big. Americans may do that because they don't want to eat a heavy lunch because they'll fall asleep. But certainly most primitive cultures, often they'll have a heavy meal at noontime or in the middle of the day, and they'll take a nap or something. And this regimen, while it works for some, for other people, is devastating, absolutely devastating. And I found that with a number of my patients who went on the program from the book and found that. First of all, it's too much fruit, not enough protein for most people, as we said earlier. Secondly, the whole idea of eating late, eating a big meal at night, just doesn't work for some people. Not that their meals are big, any of them, and some people may need more in the way of calories, but eating late at night, eating your big meal at night, doesn't always work. There's an old saying, you know, breakfast like a prince, lunch like or king, breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and dinner like a pauper. I think that one is often better for many people. Eat lightly at night, you'll tend to sleep better, instead of sitting on all that food and digesting it. Now, this is a matter of metabolism and different people. There's a good reason for this that I can go into, which is that a lot of people's adrenal glands and whole body doesn't kick in until later in the day because they're so burned out. That's the reason. And so when they wake up in the morning, they don't feel like eating, they don't feel like doing anything. And often without a cup of coffee or something, they don't even move. And it's only by the afternoon that they're even going. But that's not the case for a lot of people, and this regimen doesn't work for a lot of people, and it can throw you off. So this is another factor that seems to be logical, but if you examine it closely, it really isn't necessarily logical. It's logical by their rules of logic, all this stuff about the body cleansing in the morning and so forth, but it just doesn't work in practice on a lot of people. That isn't the way their bodies work. There seem to be different body types that have different cycles, some being more like the morning person, some being more like the evening person. That's the same as with diets. We come from very many different racial stocks. We come from, some of us are, you know, Scandinavian background, where they lived on fish, and if you were a little child and you couldn't eat fish for some reason, you died in the old days, because that's all they might have had to eat, and dairy products they in their herds. If some people come from areas where they ate a lot of meat, and if you couldn't live on the meat, you died. And so the bodies that evolved, that survived, were the meat eaters in that culture, or the fish eaters, and the dairy eaters in certain areas. And this accounts for why different diets, in part, work for different people. And you can't just ignore this kind of thing and say, oh, well, just make the transition and on and on. No, it won't work. And it may work for a while. And that's the real sad part about this, is that for a while you may feel okay and not realize the damage you're doing. And having gone through this, I know how insidious it can be and how slow it can creep up on you, and then how long it can take to rebuild once the body's gotten depleted. Just to replenish one element can take 8 months to a year, and you may have 6 or 7 or 8 minerals to replenish. So this is not a quick process of rebuilding. Well, this summarizes some points about the Fit for Life book, and I hope it answers some questions. This concludes this tape.